it could have a life in little art houses, and everybody shows up and they know all the bits. Something like how the Rocky Horror Picture Show has a cult following.
The 1993 movie Shelf Life was the final feature film directed by the late Paul Bartel, who was best known for Eating Raoul, a dark comedy about a prudish couple that murders and robs rich swingers so they can open a restaurant. Shelf Life began as a theater piece in Los Angeles, created by Olan Jones, Andrea Stein, and Jim Turner. In the film, Tina, Pam, and Scotty McLeod are taken by their parents down to the family bomb shelter in 1963 and spend the next 30 years underground, where they eventually run out of food. Shelf Life was both scorned and loved when it was released, and now, a quarter century after it was buried, the movie may be poised for a comeback.
I'm Andrea Stein, and I play Pam St. Cloud in Shelf Life. It started because of my involvement with a small theater company, the Actors Conservatory Ensemble. We had a theater called the Lex Theater in Hollywood, and we had the opportunity to do late night shows. I talked to Jim and Olan. We just thought, what interests us? And I think we were quite taken with the idea of, what if we were sequestered? What do people do when they don't have outside influences and they are forced to create a life and a culture and relationships? And what if these were kids who eventually grew up without their parents? And because we had all been really good friends and we laughed easily at each other's jokes, the rehearsal process was really, really fun because we would improvise a lot. And there would be little bits that would happen that would just be little digs personally about each other. And we'd go, oh, that makes us laugh. We'll keep that. We'll put that in the play.
I'm Jim Turner, and I play Scotty St. Cloud in Shelf Life.
Paul Bartel
wanted to see the play because it was something that I was doing, and I didn't think it was going to come, actually. But he showed up on the last night, the closing night, June 20th, 1992. And he called me the next morning saying, can you bring your cohorts over to my house? I would like to talk to you all. And so we all went over there. And there were one guy or two guys were sitting there, and clearly something was up. And he talked about how much he loved the play. And then, do we want to make a movie of it? A lot of times in LA, you do a thing hoping it will become a movie. That was not what we were trying to do at all. And we all said, of course we do. And then, you know, he said, when can you do this? When can we start? And Olan was busy doing a theatrical product somewhere.
Perhaps it was a film.
And she couldn't do it in July. He said, okay, we can't do it in July. How about August 1st? And we said, sure. We asked Andy Paley, this friend of all of ours, to write a title song. And it's a beautiful song that he wrote and got Brian Wilson to sing with him. It's just oohs and ahs and stuff like that, but it's really gorgeous.
The movie opens once we're down in the bomb shelter, after the wild parents take the three little kids down to the bomb shelter. We're all just sleeping in our own little cubbies. The lighting is beautiful, and this music is playing over as the camera just pans over all of us, you know, resting and peaceful before we erupt and the games and the craziness begin.
Here lie the St. Clouds. They did it all. They climbed the heights and tasted the bitter fruit of truth. They didn't know the word no. They were best friends to the end. And now, for one night only on our stage, we're proud to present Tina, Pam, and Scotty.
The arousing!
The amazing!
The incontinent, etc., etc. Always delightful, St. Clouds.
I'm Olan Jones, and I play Tina St. Cloud in Shelf Life. The three of us, for whatever reason in this world, know how to just drop down into that I am 6.5 years old and just going on whatever fantasy anybody wants to go on. Or like saying, no, I'm not going to be that. I'm going to be this in your fantasy.
Want to play plates and dogs? Law enforcement? Ballerinas?
Ballerinas. Ballerinas. Oh, no. Medical update? That always ends in tears. How about climb every mountain?
I personal tragedy? Monsters who cheat?
No.
It's very childlike, and it's adults acting that way, but without a wink. It's not arch. It's not ironic. This is the life. They are living their life. They are committed to these rules that we made up and we worked on.
The character that I played, Pam, was the oldest and was entrusted with the key to the food. And that was obviously very important for our survival. This is Andrea Stein. Then you've got the middle child, Tina. And then you've got the baby boy, Scotty, who we could pick on. And all of us having siblings, we understood how that worked. And taking that dynamic and then not having parents for the bulk of their growing up into adults, it just lent itself to the craziness, but the true love and protective feelings we had for each other, even though we could be, you know, in the midst of some power struggle. It was always about survival and it was always about love. I hope that this shines through, that we loved and protected each other, even when we are beating up on each other.
Does Scotty ever bother you?
How do you mean?
Like how he thinks he's the center of attraction of everything, like he's the best one.
Just because he's the loudest and can lift everything.
Doesn't make him the best.
He has very poor penmanship and citizenship behavior skills.
He never wants to be clean-up mom.
I'll be breakfast mom. Tina, would you be clean-up mom? Breakfast!
We felt that we were really a part of making this film. We weren't just actors who were hired to do it. He really wanted our input. We were allowed to, like, look through the camera. He asked, how do you think this is going? He was just so open with us and so kind and really gave us a voice, which you don't often hear when one is making a movie as an actor, that you're just told what to do. And he allowed input and feedback from us.
It didn't feel like he was messing with it. It felt like he had really seen it and seen what its nature was and knew how to illuminate more of that world that we had created. So it was just like a gift. This is Olan Jones.
Shut up!
You shut.
What happens in the end of the movie? They discover that they don't have any more food. Pam has been keeping it a secret that they don't have any more food.
How come we never have canned pears anymore?
Because you've lost the privilege, haven't you? Canned pears are a special reward for people who clean their rooms, are punctual, and show respect to their older sister by not stealing her drawings.
I'll give you $700 for that key to the food room.
What could you possibly want with that?
Canned pears.
This key is not a toy. It can't be bought. It was handed to me by Mom, and no one can go into the food room but me, and I mean it.
What happened to the food? It's almost gone.
Are we going to die?
It's like a really shocking secret. And when they discover it, they're really depressed. And then they decide to do a big production number, their idea of a production number, which is really terrible.
We live in the pyramid. Oh. Clean the Pharaoh's house for him. At night we worship Moses. He will come and rescue us. We are dancing slave maidens.
Rolling, 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 roll away the stone. I am the Pharaoh Ken. There is your baby Jesus. Where is your Moses now?
That was the end of the play. And then, you know, we went back to sleep the same way the play started. And you walk out of the play knowing, oh, wow, okay, they're dead. Those kids are dead. They're not kids, they're adults, But it was a weird, tragic ending to our funny little comedy play. This is Jim Turner. Paul said, yeah, that's not going to happen. We need a happy ending. So we did the big production number, and then we all laid down, went to sleep. And you really thought, okay, well, that's it. Movie's over. And then you hear this drilling, and then the ceiling falls in on all of us, and all this light floods in the room. And then we look up, and you see Paul Bartel playing a construction worker, and that's the end of the movie. It never found its audience for whatever reason. This isn't a typical movie. You know, it doesn't have a typical three-act structure, which bugged a lot of people. I think people that were, wait, I don't understand. No, this needs to happen, then this is what happens. That's how movies are. This is like a day in the life. And it is. It's a you need to sort of work at it. Maybe not work at it, but more let it go. And just go, okay, I'm along for the ride. This is a day in the life of these kids / adults. Let's watch it. It was rejected by Sundance. And Paul was like, what? Reject me? I was on the Sundance committee. What are you talking about? I am independent cinema. Fuck that. We're taking it to Sundance. And he booked a theater at midnight that they were using to show Sundance movies. We flew there and we printed up flyers and we walked up and down Park City Main Street handing out flyers. New Paul Bartel movie tonight. Free. What? And it was full. It was a full house. We ended up getting a review in Hollywood Reporter and Variety. And we packed it in, and it was a huge success. 2 years before Slam Dance. Because Slam Dance, they take movies to Park City during Sundance. They do exactly what we did. And Paul, I think, always felt like, you know, I think I kind of started that.
The LA-based film programmer Alex Mechanic managed to get a copy of the last remaining print of the motion picture and has arranged screenings that have drawn people in their 20s and 30s. He's joined the three actors in their effort to relaunch the film. The hope is to create a digital restoration from Shelf Life's original 35mm negative and perhaps get a deal to stream the restored film.
It's pretty rare that we were able to get our hands on that down and dirty transfer of the 35mm print that Paul's family deposited at the Academy after he passed away. And it's got a lot of scratches on it, but it kind of fits the movie in a way that it's similar to the kids. Like, it's been lost for 25 years and now it's like coming out.
This is Jim Turner. We hadn't seen the movie in 15 years. Olan and I were sitting in the back watching it going, oh my God. Is this actually really good? Jesus, this is really good. And man, people ate it up. And it was really kind of a shock to us because we hadn't thought about the movie in a long time. And we said, we got to keep this going.
This is Olan Jones. The room full of 20 to 30-year-olds, some of whom had not been born when we first did this, got all that we were trying to say with it. One of our taglines can be, we were just waiting for our audience to be born.
I hear the cottonwood whispering of love.
It could have a life in little art houses where it's like once a month and everybody shows up and they know all the bits and they can say along and sing along.
Are There Really Singing Cowboys by Scotty St. Cloud. When I was doing my assignment and I was doing my research and reading, and then I all of a sudden had to be doing the family business of my family, which is the killing of the animals. And there I was, all covered with blood and unhappiness, and I was trying to think, well, yes, there are singing cowboys, or no, there aren't singing cowboys.
Oh, very good, Scotty. Yes, of course there are singing cowboys.
Yippee-i-yo-ki-yay, yippee-i-yo-ki-yay, you're low cowhand from the Rio Grande.
Something like how the Rocky Horror Picture Show has cult followings every Saturday night at different little theaters. I think this is set up for that, because every so often over the years, I've received emails from people saying how much they love Shelf Life and how, like, we just go over to, you know, so-and-so's house every night and we know all of the bits. Like, they could do that for Shelf Life.
I am Alex Mechanic. I was contacted by this girl who's now living in Russia. She's American, but she found, like, an unmarked VHS tape in Baltimore, like, a long time ago. And she's like, what's this? And they were like, I don't know, take it. And she took it home, and it was Shelf Life, and she fell in love with it. And it was, like, her and her best friend watched it nonstop. They knew all the lines. Right. Like, I mean, she just went nuts for it.
What we would like is for this to be cleaned up and then put a nice digital copy out and get it distributed. You know, get it seen, get it out there.
For more information, go to shelflifethemovie.com.